This episode of the Oh No 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 podcast is sponsored by Dynamic Industrial Services, the rope access specialists. As long-time Wraith Rover supporters, we are very familiar with ropey performances. But if you need a service that's more Sam Stanton than Willie Accio, look no further than DIS. Operating across Scotland, they specialise in working at height, offering maintenance, inspection, repairs and more. So if you've got a problem at a height that even John Fredrickson can't reach, visit dynamicindustrialservices.co.uk to find out more. Over the course of five seasons, the Dillon Panthers contended with a broken spine, multiple affairs, grief, dementia, their entire town being split in two, and their backup kicker murdering someone. But I think they might have still had more fun under the Friday Night Lights than we did this week. Thank you for joining us again on Oh No No No. My name is Duncan Cameron, and with me today to pick through another narrow defeat to Airdrie, I have Carol Allison Smith, first of all. Buenos dias, Carol.
Buenos dias, ¿cómo estás?
I didn't get in, Carol, I don't know.
Bien.
Magic. Also with us, we've got Blair Hopcroft. How are you, Blair? Don't speak to me in a language I don't understand. Okay. And also, we've got Leslie Mayborn as well. How are you, Les?
I'm starting again.
Deary me. Right. Will we talk about the football?
Do we have to?
I think we have to, unfortunately.
Okay. Right. So, in a sense, I mean, I think we kind of got what we were asking for initially with this one. We got our back four. That was good. Don't know why you're laughing. We played a diamond as well.
It
can follow entirely your instructions. That went well. Yeah. So we got the back four that we wanted, and then it was pulled apart like cheap garlic bread 5 minutes into that game. That Nikolai Todorov with so weirdly, like all the space and time you could possibly want, and still just lashed it in first time to put Airdrie 1-0 up. Well, I was 6 minutes in. And then after that, a very familiar pattern emerged from Rovers versus Airdrie this season, as Airdrie did their jobs well, closed down any angles, were very, very patient, and still managed to look more threatening than we did when they did break away. And the Rovers really kind of huffed and puffed to very little effect. Yeah, Blair, let's start with you then.
Thanks.
That talk me through that. I think we'll just have to talk about this game as a whole, because there was one incident and it was the first thing that happened in the game, and then the rest of it really was just one solid block of not an awful lot. So give me your thoughts on sort of the overall pattern of that game and how things developed after the first 5 minutes.
It was like an overwhelming sense of inevitability about it, unfortunately. I mean, in the pre-match, you asked what we wanted or what I thought was going to happen. And I said a back four and Nikolai Todorov to score. And it came into fruition in the first 6 or 7 minutes. I mean, I can't criticise the formation because it's the one that I suggested pre-match. So there we are. I genuinely still think it was the right idea. I think their fullbacks, particularly Hancock, it's just better than what we kind of have, if I'm being honest. So I think trying to keep it narrow and trying to play through them was probably the right idea. it's just unfortunate that we lost the goal that we lost, because it completely changed the game plan and it suited them to a T, because the one thing they've done against us all season and all the games that we've played against them is they sit in and let us come at them and they just wait for us, and then they try and pick us off and catch us on the counter. And when you go 1-0 up 6 or 7 minutes into a semi-final and your game plan is to keep the ball, to sit in and to try and catch teams on the counter, I mean, it literally couldn't have went any better for Airdrie. Like, it's the ideal start for them, and it's the worst possible start for us, because that meant they didn't have to come at us. I did say after the goal went in, I turned to one of my mates and I went, well, at least we didn't score first in the first 5 minutes. That's a change of events. Do you know what I mean? We'll see what happens. But it did. It just felt inevitable, which is really unfortunate. I think it's something we're going to obviously have to talk about in this kind of podcast, is just the run of form and the lack of, I don't even know if confidence is the right word, but it probably is, but that kind of lack of belief that they seem to have in themselves at the moment, that it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy at the moment. Like, we play into it and then it happens and then it fulfills itself, so you just end up chasing a game for, I mean, that was basically chasing a game for 90 minutes, which is, it's awful. Like, yeah, so I don't think the starting 11 was the one I personally would have went with. I was a little surprised to see Callum Smith up front. I'm presuming that meant Jack Hamilton wasn't 100% fit. But then the change was made relatively early to get him on, when Zach Rudden appeared to kind of tweak something, which is a concern as well. But yeah, it's probably not the 11 I would have picked, but definitely the shape I probably would have gone with. And as it quite clearly shows, I know absolutely nothing about football.
I mean, in terms of the shape, again, we've said this before. You can tie yourself in knots, and you can lay things out in a lot of different ways. Because I think as much as that, really, I mean, it probably was a midfield diamond, but equally, you could. You know, if you wanted to, you could set it out as a 4-1-3-2 that we've used a good few times before. I think the only real sort of difference between the two is that Kyle Turner's on the right-hand side and he's naturally going to play more inside than he is. But, I mean, Dylan Easton on the left was still taking up, you know, wide positions at times. So it is, it's not a million miles away. It's not like a real kind of departure from what we've seen previously.
I think you're right as well. It wasn't actually one or the other. It seemed to kind of fluidly try and move between the two.
Yeah. And I mean, you're going to get that anyway, because there was times when Callum Smith was going out onto that right wing because Kyle Turner wasn't taking up that space. And I don't dislike that. You know, that's one of the things that playing narrower gives you, is scope out wide to move in. And again, we said beforehand, the way that Airdrie play and how well they pick up, you need to try something different. You need to be more fluid and moving around and trying to get into different spaces. And there were a couple of times when I think that largely was why you saw Turner and Easton in those positions, because that's probably not something we've tried against Airdrie up until now. We've tried the wide players and they've not been involved. So... can you have Dylan Easton playing a little bit further off as fullback, as you say? Can you Kyle Turner operating sort of between the lines? And it never really came off. I mean, it didn't come off. But in large part, I think that is because Airdrie got the goal so early. I mean, that's just... obviously, any manager would want a goal early on. It's a stupid thing to say otherwise. But in terms of the game plan and how they want to play, you know, they've seen out 2-1-0 wins against us already. They'd quite happily take an early goal, and like they'd have snapped your hand off for that, like, early goal, and then they'd have fancied their chances to see out 85 minutes against us, and that was what happened. And what you then start to lose is that just, I mean, it kind of outnumbered in the midfield. With the players that we've got in there. Because, I mean, it's like, again, we talked about it previously, and I know we keep talking about Sam Stanton as a kind of one-size-fits-all solution to every problem, which I have to tell you, I don't think he is. I don't think it's enough that you just put Sam Stanton back in and everything's perfect again. But when you're being out-fought in the midfield, because you've got a four-man midfield, whether it's a diamond, whether it's whatever it is, right? Scott Brown, brilliant. For a midfield, for a fight in the middle of the park, Scott Brown, yeah, brilliant. As good as anybody in the division, really. You've then got Dylan Easton, very good player, but he's a forward in terms of whatever you want to call it, right? He's not. If you see Dylan Easton dropping behind the halfway line to get involved, you're not thinking, well, this is going to plan. This is what we want. And that's no slight against him. Kyle Turner is probably slightly better than that for that kind of thing, but again, it's not what he wants to be doing. And then move on categorically. Not what he's there for. So you've got that midfield diamond, but it's not equipped for a kind of midfield battle, and that's what this game turned into. Leslie, give me your thoughts on that whole morass.
Oh my goodness. So, I mean, the one thing, I was just thinking about the goal. It happened very quickly, and with my charitable head on, I was thinking again, right, that's the first time this back four has played together for months. Something like this can happen. However, I then saw on one of the forums last night, some excellent human being had taken a screenshot of where everybody was standing when the ball was about to go out to Todorov. And it was a kind of organisation and defending that I haven't seen since Cubs. There was a lot of what the Cup Master would call standing about, and not an awful lot of action. And in some ways, it did remind me a bit of the second goal against Inverness, where again, you had a lot of our defence kind of standing in a line as if they were waiting for a bus, and not an awful lot of picking up players. And you know, so the ball came out to Todorov, who was in acres of space, had all the time in the world to just lash that in. As I say, if I had my charitable hat on, I would say, right, Keith Watson's first game back, within a few minutes, that's happened. But unfortunately, it just reiterates what we've seen time and time again over the last five or six games. And I mean, the thing about changing the formation, yeah, fair enough, this is the kind of game where you maybe want to try something a wee bit different and see if it works. But you did get the sense nobody really kind of knew what exactly they were supposed to be doing. Certainly fans of other teams watching us didn't know what we were trying to do. And it just kind of adds to that sense that we've had for the last five or six games. It's just been a complete gong show. You know, players running into each other, you know, people completely out of place when the shots are coming in. You know, passes going sailing out because folk aren't there to pick them up. It's a complete binfire. And, you know, as I say, a Challenge Cup semi-final in isolation is the kind of place to try that out. It's maybe not a bad place to get somebody back in, but the way that started and what followed thereafter was just symptomatic of where we've been over the last month or so.
Yeah, I agree with you completely, and it's one of these situations where we were saying just before we started recording there that there's no one big culprit. Again, I said it last week, if there's one, you know, guy in the middle of the defence who keeps kicking the ball on his own goal, you're like, right, brilliant, just drop that, Clint, and, you know, we'll be fine. And the goal is quite a good example of that as well, where it's four or five players making, in the grand scheme of things, relatively minor errors, but they're all doing it, and so it adds up to a giant error and a complete mess. And if it starts off, I haven't seen the screenshot in question. I've not ventured anywhere near Pye and Bovril since Friday night. I'm too feared. But there's a couple of points that I'd looked at myself, and I was like, one is actually when the ball is played from the midfield. So the Rovers are actually in possession. The ball gets turned over. The guy, it's a decent interception that comes down to him. And as he looks up to play it, the Rovers midfield diamond that we've been talking about is actually perfectly, as far as this one screen grab goes, like, illustrated. So Vaughan is behind the ball, chasing in. Brown is in front of the ball, chasing in. Easton is quite far on the other side, and then Kyle Turner's on the far side from the camera. And again, he's kind of angling it. So you've got Easton's too far away to be involved. The other three are all just converging on the ball. And the boy just dinks it away. Like, it's not, and that's not take away from him. Like, he doesn't have to do anything else. He just knocks it out. And immediately the Rovers' whole defence is just nullified entirely. Because of the way, as the whole midfield, sorry, is just taken out of the game completely. Because of the way that the defence is shaped up, Murray is with the man who receives the ball, and Watson is slightly behind them. And the boy just turns around and runs away. And I think that's the point where it goes from, like, oh, midfield's been caught out, to, like, oh no, this is an entire massive issue.
I was going to say, that Murray was with the man who received the balls, maybe generous, because in that screenshot he may well have been. But Murray was not with the man who took the ball for very long.
Like, yeah,
that's where it started, that foot race.
So that's, I mean, Murray's kind of flat-footed, and the guy takes the ball and he takes it on the half turn. And I think that's probably the, again, we talk about the little errors, the tiny little points that then suddenly expand out. I think Murray's expecting him to take it and face away from goal, you know, just kind of bring it in and look for a pass. And instead he takes it on the half turn and goes away. And that's where Murray's kind of flat-footed. And then he's beaten for pace. And he really, really is. He looks like he's going backwards. Yeah. And to be fair, this is a long-standing kind of issue I have with people criticising players who don't have pace. Like, you're only as fast as you are. It's a little bit like criticising a player for not being tall enough. But the thing with that, if you're a defender like Ewan Murray, you can't put yourself in the situation then where you're in a foot race like that, and that's what you get wrong. Is it an absolute...
Exactly. Like, it's schoolboy basic stuff. You know, you don't... When that ball's coming into feet, if there's even a chance that he's going to take it on the turn, and you're right, he reads it as he's going to take the ball into feet and keep it. That's the mistake, though, because he's not going to keep the ball into feet and take it. So you've got to give yourself a yard or two. Like, because in a flat foot race, he's no catching him.
No. And that's, you can see the way that he shifts his body weight, where he's expecting that his next move is going to be basically just like grabbing up the back of the guy and just holding him so that he can't turn, and he's already turned. So Murray's having to move back, and he's gone by that point. He then compounds that further, because when the boy gets to the byline, he dives in to sort of ostensibly block the cross, and the boy just turns away from him again. And it's at that point where the defence as it ends, so Millen has been completely left behind by the move. Millen's almost out of the picture. Easton, to his credit, has filled in because he's had to, because Liam Dick has picked up the other run. So the Rovers back four, as you look at it in that move, has gone from being Millen, Watson, Murray, Dick. It's now shaped up to be Murray, Dick, Watson, Easton. And you've got Scott Brown and Ross Millen are kind of running in to support.
Again, I think running is maybe a bit generous, but yeah.
Yeah.
Prancing.
And then I think this is the frustrating bit for me. There's not then like a killer pass. Because it's that point where you think, oh, the defence is totally out of order. The ball basically just gets bobbled into the middle. And this is where Easton makes probably the biggest kind of critical error in the whole thing, but I think it's also the most forgivable. So the ball runs out to the edge of the box, and Easton leaves Todorov because he has to, because because he's free on the edge of the box. Like we talked about last week, Alex Samuel scored a second because he was free on the edge of the box. So Easton hairs across, dives in, makes the block. So he's done what he had to do at that point. The problem is that behind him, you've then got Ewan Murray and Scott Brown, both just diving in for the ball. And this, I'm assuming, is the point that's been screenshotted elsewhere. Because you've essentially got three Rovers players are diving in at the ball, and three Rovers players are behind them standing watching. Yet Millen, Watson and Dick are just there, to the right of Kevin Dabrowski. The ball then bobbles about again, and two Rovers players try and header it away and just essentially bump into one another.
And that's Dick and Millen. At right back, that's our left back and our right back challenging each other for a header.
On the penalty spot.
Yeah. Slightly to the left-hand side of it, yeah.
And then, is it Charlie Telfer, is that his name? Just, he then just dinks the ball out to the side. That's a lovely little pass, but that's all all he needs to do. And yeah, as you've got Todorov there, who's essentially up till that point just been standing watching, like standing aside watching the Dodgems as everybody else just crashes around, and he's just like smoking a fag on the edge of the 6 yard box. And it comes across.
Actually, I'm going to say, see if you watch it again, Todorov's not actually out there for that long. He literally is in the middle and peels wide just before the header. He's like shouting for a pass, and he points and runs. They then, obviously, the ball drops, at which point he gets the pass. So it's only, there's only like a second where he goes. But see, for me at that point, the biggest criticism I have actually isn't of Dylan Easton, who I think has to go to the edge of the box and shut that down, because there's no one else is going to get there. And it feels harsh saying it, but my criticism's actually of Watson, who's the one player who's standing in a defensive position, who's come away from the ball and is actually just fronting it up. And when you look at that screenshot, he's the furthest right at that point. And he's either got to be screaming at somebody to get out to him, or he has to be going. But if you actually look at him, I don't even know if he knows he's there, because he's got his back, he's turned kind of side on facing the main stand. He's completely lost the run of, either lost the run of Todorov, or just doesn't think there's a chance of the ball coming to him, which is the fatal error. And credit to Todorov, by the way, because that's a cracking finish.
That's, I was going to say that. Like, he's got time to take two or three or possibly four touches if he wants, and to just have the kind of confidence. He's on form, obviously. And he just, I'm just going to put my foot straight through this. And it's a really, really good finish.
Israel, I think if he takes a touch, Kev's a big unit, like, mm-hmm. and he's not a long way out. So if he takes a touch, Kev's shutting him down, because Kev will. He'll come running right out at him, because that's what he does. He does it later on in the second half, comes out and shuts the run down. And I actually think it's quite a hard finish. If he takes a touch, I think his only chance of getting a really clean effort at goal is the first touch. And fair play, because he lashes it home.
Yeah. It's an excellent finish. But I think to your point there about Watson, like that again though just typifies the whole thing, which is like, you're right, Watson I don't think does know he's there. But I think it's because like he shouldn't ever be the one that Watson's the right sided centre half. If somebody's free in the left hand side of the box, he's thinking, right, there's three or four guys ahead of me who should be picking that up. Now, in the moment, obviously, you should be looking and seeing that there's a free man. But that, I think, that's the problem with the whole goal, is that the boy wins a ball in the midfield, thinks he'll be pass in, and from that moment on, no Rovers player has any idea where they're supposed to be.
Yeah, completely. We've got the benefit of doing this blow by blow, like in slow motion. This whole thing took 12 seconds, like from beginning to end, if that. Like, it's quick. Do you know what I mean? For me, actually, I see if you go right back to the whole thing, where's the point where we could have stopped it? Murray should have wiped him out. He should have taken the book in. As soon as he turned him, Murray should have just taken him down. Like, it's one of them where, you know, in hindsight, you say that. In the moment, it's early on in the game, 6 minutes in, do you want to take a book in? Maybe not. But actually, that's probably the one point where this whole thing could have been avoided, is when he takes that ball. It's like the boy that's on loan for Fulham, isn't it? The young lad that's up front for them.
No, I think he came off the bench.
Oh, did he? I don't know who it was then. Whoever took the ball in, later, he turned him.
It was, I think it was Frizzell running through.
Ah, right, okay. He left him like he was in quicksand.
Well, I tell you how I think you'd prevent that goal. And this is obviously complete benefit hindsight stuff. You play two old midfielders. That's how you prevent that goal. That's how you stop that one cheap pass taking out your entire midfield. And that is, I mean, it feels cheap to say it now, given that Loyal were like, you know, play a back four. And he plays a back four. And I'm like, and two holding midfielders. I forgot to say that before, but I did also mean and two holding midfielders.
But he's done that against Airdrie and it hasn't worked. Do you know what I mean? He did that in the first game at Airdrie and it didn't work. There's a wee bit of me, and I know we're going to go around the houses on all of this stuff, but like, there's a lot of there's a lot of negativity at the moment, and quite rightly, by the way, because it's rank. It is rank rotten, and we need to be calling it, right? We've been really lucky on this podcast that we've talked about win after win after win after win, and it is rotten in it. But the idea that's starting to permeate that we're not trying, or that there's, yeah. Do you know what I mean? That Murray's standing by, like changing the formation. He's trying to do something different because what he's done, I'll be honest, sorry, I'm ranting now. You know, the one image on Twitter that really peed me off this week, somebody posted, and it's been done before, and rightly at that point had been done, that Albert Einstein quote that gets trotted out all the time, you know, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome is the definition of insanity. He is literally not doing the same thing again and again and again. He is trying, probably too hard, but he is trying like a bear to do something different, and it is not working.
I mean, again, it's worth just saying again, in fairness, a goal like that, I remember the first game of the season at Partick where Murray had literally arrived on the Thursday and went straight in, yep. And we were pish in the first half, and we yep. let in an appalling goal. And, you know, the start of the Airdrie game was similar. You know, that's 5 minutes of Watson being back within five yep. minutes of Murray trying something different. Yep. If you're going to lose a goal, it's going to happen in that kind of situation. And, you know, we'll come on to kind of like what happens going forward next, but you do kind of think, certainly with a defensive line, just let it settle. Let it settle. Give it a few weeks. We might not keep clean sheets immediately, but let it settle, and hopefully stuff yeah. like that will happen less. And because the one thing, you know, we can talk again about Airdrie as well, but they're one of these teams, and our both have been the same for the last few years. You can name a lot of that starting team. You know, it's the same names yeah. that have been there, that same defence. And it shows when you attack them, like, you know exactly what Fordyce is going to do. He knows where McCabe is. Big, gorgeous Josh Ray knows to come flying out and grab the ball. You know, okay, they've added Hancock in the summer, but they know where everybody is because they've all been playing together for a long time. So, I mean, I'd absolutely agree that it's not the same team. It's not the same formation. But I'd like to think and hope we're now at a place where we can let it settle in a bit, certainly defensively. And there endeth the happy clapping, because I've got things to vent about later as well.
I think you're right, though, that you need that settled defence, and you can't play 10 games consistently without having a first one. You know, that there has to be a time when that's the change, but you would hope now that you can go through it. I think that's, you see that through, that there's well, I mean, I know it hasn't happened very often, but if you're Ewan Murray playing alongside Keith Watson, it's a very different job for you than it is playing alongside Dylan Corr, for example. Because the sort of yin and yang of it all is very different. So it's like, right, what's Keith going to do and what am I going to do? It's very different to what's Dylan going to do and what am I going to do? And that takes time for that to come in. Carol, give me your thoughts, please, on the whole debacle.
I'm going to be honest. Start and whistle. I was two bottles of Cava Deep in and fully up for it. The atmosphere was coming through the Wraith TV. I was out at the singing sections going, we could really go for this. And then we left a Ramstein touring truck size gap on our wing, and it just went downhill from there. And it was, when Blair, when you said it was like playing in quicksand, it did. If that wasn't an artificial pitch, I would have said that our midfield was just solid mud, because we just didn't move after that. And not even deep in our midfield. If you'd asked me what colour Airdrie's goalkeeper was wearing about 20 minutes in, I wouldn't have been able to tell you, because I was like, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen him. I'm going to assume it's opposite to blue because Kev's in blue, but I could not tell you what colour he was. Durgent, slow, frustrating. And you're starting to see that. I think players are frustrated with themselves because it's, certain things aren't going the way that they want. Things aren't moving the way they want. They're not turning the way they want. And then that frustration is bubbling up to each other. But it's not that anyone's doing anything wrong. It just seems to be a collective selection of little fuck-ups make a big fuck-up.
I think that could be the banner for the last five games, really. Yeah. Because it's, I mean, so I think I'm going to come back, and Leslie, I think you and I might be on the same page with this. You still got some stuff you want to kind of vent about. And it's,
me too.
Yeah. So I'm going to go back to what I was saying a minute ago about kind of playing the two holding midfielders. And again, as I say, it's hindsight stuff. And to an extent, it's shuffling deck chairs a wee bit as well, right? But I think the probably it's two sides of the same coin. So it's playing one more, and I say holding midfielder. What I really mean is someone in the base of that midfield. One, and really what I actually mean is one less forward. Because Ian Murray, I don't think he's ever said this out loud, but I mean, it's pretty clear to me that he's trying to get as many attacking players on the pitch as he can. If you had to sort of boil down his current philosophy, his current approach, that's what it is. We've seen that with the 3-6-1s and all this stuff with it. And at times, it's, you know, completely justifiable. When you're a goal down, you're 5 minutes to go and all this stuff. And listen, we've been over that an awful lot recently. But what, over these last five games, I think what we've not seen is a correlation between the number of attackers you have on the park and the number of attacks that you have. Certainly those that culminate in a chance. So yesterday, Friday night, you've got your back four, you've got Scott Brown. Everybody else on the park is essentially an attacker. Kyle Turner's sort of probably a bit of a kind of hybrid, but fundamentally he's more forward-thinking than he is otherwise. So you've got Dylan Easton, who's playing, kind of wide midfield, but is effectively a winger. You've got Lewis Vaughan is playing at the head of the diamond. I don't know what that would be, but he's a kind of attacking midfield, but he is a striker. And then you've got Kyle Turner, you've got Scott Brown, and then you've got Callum Smith and Jack Hamilton acting as out-and-out strikers. One good chance in that game. Penalty box chance.
90.
About 10 minutes to go. Lou Vaughan gets a header that kind of pops up. And I think all you can do is try and get your neck behind that. And in the end, he puts it straight at the goalkeeper.
I think it was actually 90th minute, because I seem to remember them announcing the 5-minute stoppage time that came after the 90 on, certainly on the railway stand clock. So, I mean, we'd literally gone 90 minutes without a reasonable chance.
Because there are kind of a couple of half chances before that. Easton puts one over the bar from outside the box.
A few against legs.
Aidan Connolly kind of zips one in. The keeper gets down to. But what we're not seeing, though, sorry, is my sort of thesis point on this, is that these extra attackers aren't leading to extra attacks. They're not creating more chances. We're not getting, by playing two strikers, we're not getting twice as many shots on goal. And by then supplementing those strikers with additional forwards, again, we're not creating more. And I think it goes back to something that I said before when we talked about like throwing four strikers on or taking Sean Byrne off like early doors when you're starting to chase the game. It's like, well, you don't start a game that way because it's not the best way to play a game of football. And I think this is less extreme than that, but it's the same thing, which is if you go and just take, you know, if you went and you picked 30 games, right, across any level of football, 30 games, teams playing a 4-2-3-1, managers playing a 4-2-3-1, managers playing a diamond, there's not going to be very many of them who are only playing one proper sort of not attack-minded midfielder. If you look at a diamond, typically you've got an out-and-out destroying holding midfielder and then a couple of box-to-box guys. If you're playing a 4-2-3-1, you're playing one sort of proper destructive midfielder and then someone else who is there to do a similar job. Someone like a Brad Spencer or a Regan Hendry, who might still be able to get forward, but they're going to, you know, play and know how to play that deep role. And that's then, it's a platform to build from. So you might have one less attacking player further forward, but your supply lines are much stronger and you're getting the ball into them and you're getting the ball into them in better positions. And that's what we're failing to do at the moment. It would be different if we were creating five chances a game and Jack Hamilton was missing them all. And you'd be like, oh, bloody hell, Jack, what chance have you got? Or what chance have we got? But Jack Hamilton's not getting these chances. And that's not down to him. You know, we've played different strikers. We've played a fair few different strikers. It's not coming together. And I think we've had too much. We've tried umpteen different permutations of a load of different forwards. And at a certain point, you've got to say, it's not the forward's fault. And again, we're not coming on here and saying, oh, this guy had a terrible game, this guy had a terrible game, and this guy had a terrible game. So everybody had really average games. So if you've not got loads of individual errors, you must have systemic errors. And that's where I am with my just play an extra holding midfielder. And then it'll give you that kind of platform to build from. That's the frustration for me. Say that again, sorry.
I'd say as well.
Can I disagree?
Of course you can.
I don't know if Leslie wants to jump in first. And then I can
no, you go first, Blair, and I'll piggyback on the back of you.
So I agree with the sentiment of what you're saying completely. I don't agree with the fix, if I'm being honest. So when we said earlier that you don't think that Sam Stanton is the thing that will fix everything, I think he actually fixes the problem that for me that you're talking about. So the biggest issue we have at the moment is, I think you're absolutely right, is that we've got six attackers on the park and we're asking at least two or three of them to do effectively either a defensive job or a build-up job, which is not their strength. I think you're 100% correct on that, which is why I think if you watch us, we appear to be going, certainly when Jack Hamilton's on the pitch, and frustratingly, even when he's not, going a bit more direct. It's like, we've got the ball, right, we need to be 40 yards up the pitch because that's where we can build from. And I think the thing that links back to front best for us is Sam Stanton. So Dylan Easton is the perfect case in point for that for me. If you watch him on Friday night and actually pretty much every week that he's been playing recently, if he gets a ball in our half, he fronts a man up, but he slows everything down. And the nature of his game is draw a man in, draw a man in, draw a man in and beat him, which is great if you beat him. And if you don't beat him, you're losing the ball in the halfway line. And so we've lost that zip in terms of that transition from back to front, from defending to attacking. We've lost completely that. I'm not convinced that Sean Byrne does that very well either. Sean Byrne is we talk about him being that Rolls Royce of a footballer. He picks up the ball. If anything, his job is to kind of slow things down a little bit, you know, create the rhythm, get the pass moving. But it's not about that quick zip to the forward line. If you're playing with six forwards, you need the ball forward. Scott Brown probably does that a little bit better than him, so I can kind of see what Murray's trying to do. And you can see that when Millen gets the ball, it's that instant diagonal looking to get the ball into Hamilton and see if we can feed off of him. And it's just not coming off. It's not working. But I feel that the best way we can transition will be when Stanton comes back. And I think the problem we have at the moment is, I think that's what he wanted Kyle Turner to do on Friday night. And I hope Kyle's not listening, because I'm going to need to say this. He's been rotten. Like, I'm not seeing it at all. And I mean, by his own standards, Kyle Turner was like team of the year last year. But he has not hit the ground running. He's obviously come in slightly unfit, I don't know, carrying a knock. He's picked up a couple of knocks as well while he's been playing. He looked good in his debut, but since then, I'm just not seeing the player I think that we thought we were getting. And I think that's the big gap for me, is back to front. I think exactly the same problem as what you've got. I just don't think another holding midfielder fixes that. I think if anything, it maybe makes it worse.
And sorry, Les, I know you're going to come in on this, yeah. I think you could play the same 11 as Friday night, or I could play the same 11 as Friday night, now let's put it on me, and still resolve the same problem that I'm talking about. I think if Kyle Turner is 30 yards deeper as an average position, you get a better performance out of that team.
Maybe, so yeah.
That's Kyle Turner. He was playing on that kind of right-hand side of the diamond or whatever, however you want to put that. So he's too... He's essentially part of the... He's playing where Airdrie want him to play, essentially. Because this is the big thing I think Stanton gives you better than anyone else. And as you're saying there about who does what, and as you say, Sean Byrne is very much the sort of hub for all your passing. He's always available for a pass, never wastes a pass. We can receive it from anywhere, we'll give it to you anywhere you want. Sam Stanton, better than anyone else, will carry the ball from a deeper position. So he'll pick the ball up and he'll move it 30 yards by taking it there, and that moves the team. And that's what I think Airdrie are very, very good. When you don't have someone doing that, you can't pass through them. They're too organised. And I've said it before, I'm not going to say it again much more today. I'm trying not to speak nicely about Airdrie. I've done it far too much. But it's their organisation. You cannot pass through them. We don't have that option. So what you need to do then is move them and find the space. And that's what Stanton does. And I say that is what Kyle Turner potentially could do. But you need to be giving him the ball deep and then using someone else to then start from deep and move forward. Whereas instead, we're trying to get the ball to Kyle Turner the same way we're trying to get the ball to Vonnie, same way we're trying to get the ball to Dylan Easton, and it's not working.
Does that player that you're thinking of maybe rhyme with Boss Matthews, by any chance?
I think he's the second, probably the second, the next one in line. I mean, Scott Brown can do it as well, but I think you would need Sean Byrne in there as well, almost, to do that. But sorry, Leslie, come and give us your thoughts on all that.
Aye, so it was a couple of things. I mean, I've said this before on here. I am not the biggest fan of Vaughan playing at the tip of the midfield. And he can do it. He's really good. But as I say, just intuitively, something seems really wrong about taking your top scorer further away from the box. And if that means that one of Callum Smith and Louis Vaughan has to go in the tiger cage, then I think it has to be that. That I can understand wanting to have him on the pitch. But as I say, something intuitively seems really wrong about taking the top scorer further away from the box. And also, I mean, credit to Jack Hamilton. You know, when he came on, he won a lot of things in the air. But it was a bit kind of Ethan Varian circa 2001, and that he was winning a lot of stuff, and then there was nobody there to just pick up and capitalise on it. What I did want to add as well, and this is maybe going to take the conversation in a slightly different direction, it was Blade had mentioned something about kind of playing the ball going out to Millen, and it made me think about something I've seen for a couple of weeks on the left, and Graham Meldrum is going to kill me for this, but, you know, Dylan Easton gets the ball out in the left. And I don't know if this is an Easton thing or if it's a Dick thing, but you can see how reluctant they are to give the ball to Dick when we're attacking. So we go down the right, you know, Millen may have the ball, it might be Connolly. Then Ross Millen will come down, and if nothing else has gone on, they'll pass it out to Millen, who, if nothing else, will put an exquisite cross in and something may well happen. You can visibly see when we go attacking on the left how reluctant anybody is to give Dick the ball. It reminds me, like, when I used to play fives, like, I'm a rubbish footballer. I'm a really, really terrible footballer. I can run a lot. I can run around like a headless chicken. And I'm fairly good at kind of blocking balls. But I'm hopeless at actually moving the ball and coordinating. And my teammates would actually, you know, again, same kind of thing. People would actively try to not give me the ball. You know, you'd actually have other people shout, no, don't pass to him, which is a real bell-end thing to do at fives, by the way. If you're just having a game of fives, that's a real dick move. Don't do that. But the point is, you know, there's something going down the left there where there's that real reluctance, actually sadly with good reason, to give the ball to Dick, because we know what will happen is a cross will then go over the bar, or he'll fail to control it and it'll go out. And that's not a direct criticism of Liam Dick, it's just it's not in his skill set, but it is something, I think something else, that is limiting the options that we have going forward.
I think it's a very fair point. And actually with Ross Millen, it's not as stark, but there is an element of it on the other side as well, which is that Ross Millen is his crossing's excellent, but it's very one note. And as much as you said there, you know, the ball goes down, it's Millen or whoever it is, and even if someone else, they break in the side, they knock it back to Ross Millen, you know exactly what he's going to do. He's either going to deliver it first time, or he's going to trap it, knock it forward 2 yards, and then deliver it from where he is. And he's very good at it. This really is picking holes. But to take Friday night again, it's quite predictable. You know what it's going to be. You know, if you're the defender, you're not having to think about, like, oh, is he going to come outside? Is he going to go inside? Like, man, if he knocks about the fullback, he's probably going to just whip it in from where he is. And that certainly on the left-hand side, I think that is one of the big things that when games aren't going for us, that we really miss, is the additional option that like an out-and-out attacking fullback would give you. And I think a lot of the time we benefit from having a very solid defensive fullback in Liam Dick, but it's where it's not having the option, I think, is the big frustration that you see it when you're chasing games. And it's just and actually this is something I wanted to say today. I don't think there is any hint at all from anyone in that squad of lack of effort or lack of endeavour or anything like that at all. I've not really seen many people suggesting that, to be fair, but I'm sure they're out there. But I'm not seeing that at all. I don't think there's anything like that. But with Liam Dick, it's very much, once he's across the halfway line, you can just tell it's whatever it is, 99% perspiration, 1% inspiration. Like he's trying, but he's very much having to try, as opposed to, you know, maybe a more attack-minded wing back almost who's happy to hit the byline and all that kind of stuff. And it does, as I say, it's one less weapon in your arsenal in a game where maybe the opposition are being quite stubborn. Anything else anyone wants to complain about? It's quite therapeutic, to be fair. We said that before.
I was going to say that. See, the issue I've got, I'm going to say it because it's the one thing everybody's talking about, certainly in the social media that I'm seeing, is those fullbacks, right? And you're right, there's no kind of lack of effort. However, the more I watch us play, the more I think that neither fullback suits us. Neither fullback actually does what this setup and this team needs. And it's the one position, or the two positions, the one area of the pitch where there's absolutely zero competition whatsoever. And so next week or 2 weeks away, the two of them start again. And I don't think it's healthy, because we've got to the situation where, and I think any Rovers fan who watches us weekly will know, Liam Dick's a really good defender and he defends really well, but his attacking option is lacking. Ross Millen can put a good cross in the box. But, and I'm going to say this because I actually really like Ross, so I really, really hope he doesn't hear this because I feel really bad. We're sitting on Friday night watching the game and I'm like, right, so Ross Millen doesn't really have any pace. He doesn't really like taking on a man and he can't really defend very well. So as far as the ticky box for a fullback goes...
I think that's harsh to say that he can't defend very well. I don't think I don't think he's very good in the air. But I would take issue from saying that he doesn't defend very well. I think that's
fair. Okay,
that's fair. I mean, Paradise, Louis Moe. Yeah,
yeah. He can absolutely put in a tackle. I'm not denying that at all. He can defend, but he's not defending at the moment. The balls that are effectively costing us goals is what I'm meaning. We keep having this situation where it's either a ball over the top, and players are getting burnt for pace, or it is that cross ball into the box that we're not dealing with. And for me, they're the two things that Ross Millen doesn't deal with very well. They're the two things that Liam Dick does deal with very well. So we're kind of lopsided in that regard. And then you turn it around and going forward, the left side doesn't really contribute very much. And the right side can if you use them properly, because I think you're absolutely right. His limitation, if you want to put it, is that he crosses the ball from where he is. But my God, what a ball he puts in the box normally. So I'm not, like, as I say, I'm not criticising at all. But when I say he doesn't defend, I'm meaning he's not defending the balls that we need to deal with. And that is just starting to really show its head. And I don't know if that's what part of the whole three at the back thing is about, but it It's like three at the back suits Dick to a T. I think you've said it, Duncan, a few times. That is 100% Liam Dick's best position, the left of a three. It does not suit Ross Millen in the slightest because he will not attack a ball in the air and he's not got the pace to play that alongside a centre-half who we're saying doesn't have pace. You know, you sometimes just need that quick player on the right and the left to kind of cover unless they read the game very well. Maybe that's what I mean, actually. If I'm being honest, I don't think it's he doesn't defend. He maybe just doesn't read the game as well as what he could do.
I think I don't know.
Maybe I'm just being honest.
I think that's on the manager more than that's on Ross Millen. In terms of the couple of games we played as a back three, because I think it's predictable. Like when we saw it's a back three and Ross Millen's in it, nobody was like brilliant, great, that'll suit. Yeah. Like
But I think that's what I mean. It's not. I'm not criticising him directly, although it sounds like I am. I'm genuinely not. I think it's like the two of them don't suit what we are trying to do. I almost feel like Murray needs to either have two fullbacks who can defend and will defend everything and will not contribute at all attacking wise because he wants to have six attackers on the park and so there's no room for them. We'll get the ball, we'll bring the ball into the midfield, bring it forward and away you go. Or he needs fullbacks who are capable of overlapping and putting in crosses all the time. And I feel like we don't have either.
So there's a thing about if you play 2-4-4-2s against one another, right? So two teams, but it's like the mid-90s, everybody's playing 4-4-2. You line up against each other. Both teams cancel each other out apart from your fullbacks, essentially. Because your fullback, everybody man marks, but your fullbacks are being marked by wingers who don't typically do an awful lot of defending, right? So if anybody's going to get space, anybody's going to get a little bit of leeway to get forward, it's going to be your fullbacks. And that's how you create a little bit extra space. That's how you can make the difference. And it's where, although you know, maybe we're playing a diamond, maybe we're playing a 4-2-3, whatever, you come up against a team like Airdrie, who are very organised and they sit in, that same dynamic appears. So it's like, right, so Hamilton's being man-marked, Smith's being man-marked, Vaughan's being man-marked, Easton's being man-marked, Turner's being man-marked. They've got an extra man in the midfield anyway, so Scott Brown can barely, even if Scott Brown's got the ball, he's not got anybody in front of him to pass to. But what you might be able to do is you might be able to run off someone like Frizzell. He's not necessarily going to track your fullback all the way. Same with the boy on the other side. What's his name? McGregor's on the other side, I think. Like, if anybody is going to have a bit of time and a bit of space to get away, it's going to be one of your fullbacks. This is one of the things Patrick Thistle are really good at. The boy Jack McMillan plays right back, scored more than once this season, popping up on the penalty spot because he's got that to go and run away. Now, again, this is not to say that, like, oh, Ross Millen, you need to be doing that, or Liam Dick, I need you to suddenly be doing it. It's a trade-off that you get with players. Not everybody can do, you know, all things. In the same way that, you know, you can't just ask Aidan Connolly to go and be a target man. It's not going to work. And to an extent, it's a trade-off of squad building. It's what you don't get. If you can only have, you know, you only have a finite budget, you have to make decisions. Do you want extra players here? Do you want extra players there? You could maybe argue, do we need another attacking player, you know, in January? Could we have brought in someone to cover those areas? Certainly that would have been my preference, in particular on that left-hand side, as you say, Leslie. I think if you can get someone who is just more attack-minded, and I think it's a case of you then use both. Some games you want Liam Dick, some games you want another attack-minded left-back. And it's the kind of thing that in a game where we've seen a lot of this Murray ball stuff, where it's like, you know, half an hour ago and you're just flinging forwards on, half an hour ago, put you an attack-minded fullback on, and then you're still in your structure, you're still more organised, but you've got more of a chance of doing something because you can run off your winger and you can get away. And there's I don't know, it feels like, obviously, we've just lost five games to the bounce, so a lot of this stuff that you can point at. Like, none of us were, actually, I think I was, but, like, we certainly weren't complaining about Ross Millen. No, you know, 3 months ago. And say, oh, Ross Millen only crosses from deep. Like, I can't believe this. This is a nightmare. These things come to the fore when we've lost games, but they haven't actually changed. Ross Millen hasn't stopped hitting the byline. Liam Dick hasn't, you know, he wasn't acting as a mercurial winger in the first half of the season and now isn't, and we're wondering what's happened. Like, there are more things beyond that. But definitely, these are the things where I think when you lose five games in the bounce, you start pointing fingers, and these are the places that you can start pointing at. Carol, in terms of this kind of last five games as a whole, is there anything in particular that you'd be looking, you'd kind of hoping that they come back a little differently in terms of approach or attitude or anything like that? We come back in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, I mean, picking up on what you both said about Ross Millen and Dick, I think if you were a team doing homework, you could laminate their crib sheets for the last five games and just give it and say, learn that, and you'll cover them. Other team members are like, okay, you'll need to do a little bit of homework, but with that, you just give it laminated crib sheets and says you'll do this. So I think we need, I don't want to go full Murray Ball, but I think we need to start shaking it up a little, because are we any different than we were at the start of the season, or have teams just done their homework? Because Liam Dick hasn't gone downhill from the start of the season to now. It's just other teams are saying, okay, we know what you're going to do, so we're going to close it down. And maybe that's, we need to start thinking plan A, plan B, plan C and plan D, because we're predictable. We've become predictable. So that's what I would change, a little bit of unpredictability.
And that's hopefully that's what Stanton brings when he comes back again.
Yeah.
It is. I think he is the one who, and we said it before he got injured, sadly, that like he is the most unique midfielder that we have. He's the one that we don't have a direct replacement for. Again, I think we actually said that hopefully at that time we were saying, oh, when Ross Matthews comes back, he could be that. We've really not seen anywhere near enough for Ross Matthews to say whether he's in a position to do that. But yeah, it'll certainly, you'd hope that this 2 week break means that you've got Keith Watson coming really kind of back up to speed. Let's just talk about Keith Watson for a minute. Because as you say, Leslie is back in. You know, that's a game out of the way. Hopefully we now get a good run out of them. How did you feel Keith Watson played overall in that game?
He did all right. I mean, he wasn't really at fault for anything thereafter. I mean, he is not the fastest by any stretch of the imagination. I think the phrase I used in the group chat was like, imagine that a 1995 Volkswagen Passat diesel estate has turned into a human being and has started playing football. And that's the kind of pace and acceleration you get out of Keith Watson. Weirdly enough, I don't feel you notice the lack of pace with Watson as much as you do with Murray. And it makes me think about when we had Christoph Berra. I mean, Berra had very little pace, but he always knew where he was, and the experience, the game intelligence really made up for that. And you feel a bit with Watson that was the case as well. I mean, so, like I say, I think the big thing with Watson is we got 90 minutes out of him, and hopefully he can sort of kick on from here. You know, we got a full game out of him. He didn't break down. By the time he'd bedded in a bit, he was generally all right. Right enough, Airdrie didn't have to push us very hard. The one worry is, like I say, you know, we saw him, the boy McGregor, could kind of figure out you could sprint at our defence and you're going to get a chance out of sprinting at them. But yeah, by and large, I think Watson for me is absolutely fine and just very, very glad he's back.
Yeah, me too. I think what we got from Keith Watson was exactly what you get from Keith Watson. You know, again, he's not going to come back and be quick. And what he does is balls come in and he just gets rid of them first time. Whether it's with his foot or whether it's with his head, he gets rid of it. But what I like about that, again, and something you hear the odd groan sometimes, the ball comes in and actually he's got a bit of time, and instead he just puts his foot through it and it lands at somebody's feet in the midfield, the opposition. What I like about it, though, and it kind of flips a lot of stuff we've been saying ahead, is if you're one of his teammates, it's entirely predictable. So you know exactly what he's going to do, and it makes your job easier. Because you don't have to worry about is he going to bring this down? Am I going to need to be available? No, he's just going to launch it and you can reset and go again. And I think it's that kind of adjustment again, which, you know, you said at the start of the season, playing against Partick Thistle, Ewan Murray was just off the train. They looked, you know, the there was no relationship there, but it really settled down. I was thinking again, Keith Watson in the League Cup game against Dunfermline, which is obviously, you know, right at the beginning of the season, he looked really exposed. Lewis McCann kept just going round them and running them. You think, dearie me, this could be a long season. Like, this guy looks like he's going to be caught out time and time again. And they just didn't, really. You know, it's, they got a couple of games together and they Missy Murray came in. And actually then you learn, right, where does the defensive line need to be? You know, you've got that, you know, warhorse in the middle where he's just, he wins his headers, wins his tackles. Nothing fancy. He's not going to go on a mazy run or anything, but he's a decent footballer and he does his defending very, very well. So I'm delighted that he's back. And I think hopefully with a little bit of time to resettle, a fortnight to work on it, you should get that kind of relationship back in. And that is a very solid bedrock for the second half of the season. Right, couple of just kind of stray points then from Friday night. Blair, I know at one point you wanted to have a chat with the referee. Do you still want to talk with the referee?
I think we've been negative enough. I thought, honestly, just really quickly, I thought he epitomised for me everything that Airdrie do well and we don't do well. Like, they got a goal up and they decided they were going to slow everything down, they were going to, you know, kick balls about and pretend they couldn't catch balls and all the usual stuff. And everybody gets upset about it. And I'm like, well, if it was the Rovers, I would want them to do exactly the same thing. But they get away with it because the official had, in my opinion, absolutely zero control over that game whatsoever. He spoke to the goalkeeper about 4 or 5 minutes into the second half about time wasting. And then he just kept doing it. And he never got booked for it. And it's that thing of, if you speak to him about it, you're saying to him, keep doing it, because if you keep doing it, I'm going to book you. So you've got at least one more. You can waste time at least one more time if you want to. So the goalkeeper will waste time one more time and then doesn't get booked. So he wastes time some more, and he wastes time some more. And he just kept doing it. I thought that the highlights, but the discussion we'd had, obviously, pre-recording was about the shortness of the Ray TV highlights package, which was really, really short for any game we've had this season. And you said it yourself, Duncan, but Ian Grieve deserves a lot of credit for getting 7 minutes out of that game. Because it was not, and I don't think any Airdrie fan would disagree with it, it wasn't a good game of football. The conditions were terrible. For anyone that wasn't there, the wind was awful. And it had a lot to do with the goalkeeper kicking the ball and it getting all the way through to the striker, was because you couldn't read the flight of the ball in the air from the kicks. People groaning at Kev's kicks going out to the sort of main stand side. The wind was carrying it right across the pitch kind of thing. I mean, not to say that his kicking was in any way, shape or form good. I'm not saying that. But the conditions were awful. But the referee, I thought he had a really poor game. Our old pal, Colin Stephen, he was just intent on ensuring that no game of football was going to break out. And Airdrie were more than happy to oblige him on that. And we didn't have the guile to do anything about it. I mean, the one for me, the boy goes down injured. Their centre half, I think it was, that was down on the sort of edge of the 18-yard box. And Ross McCabe stood and was at the referee for a good, I don't know, even a minute and a half, 2 minutes. And the referee just took it. He stood there and he let him talk. And then he moved away. And then Ross McCabe went again and he booked him. And I'm like, you should have booked him 2 minutes earlier. Why has Ross McCabe got 2 minutes in your head? Like, and Ross McCabe does it perfectly. I've said it before, I can't stand his smug wee face. But he just, they were so streetwise, so clever. And the referee just, for me, yeah, really weak.
Really only thing I would say to that is, I think you're right, but I think Mickey Cameron could have refereed that game and would have still got beat 1-0.
Oh, 100%.
I don't think it's... Yeah.
No, not at all. I'm meaning just more in general in the terms of the actual game itself, the way that the game kind of went. They set out with a clear game plan to shitfest it after they went 1-0 up, and I think they did it really, really, really well. And the only chance we had was either to play around them, which we weren't capable of doing, like I say, or actually the official just dealing with the time wasting. 5 minutes, by the way, I'm sorry. And I had no desire to sit there for another 10 minutes and watch that game. But where did five come from? Like,
yeah, you'd have had
five for the actual injuries alone. The time that the boys sat on the floor was at least five. There was another four or five substitutions which were led to believe are at least 30 seconds each. It was a farce.
A couple of years ago, that was maybe a 5-minute game. But on the standards of this season, when we've been getting loads, I was expecting more than that.
I've got 2 points I want to make just to fill on from that. First of all, I'm going to hold something up to my screen, and I don't know if this is going to translate or not. This is Ross McCabe. The Airdrie manager is Rhys McCabe. Ross McCabe is a pretty good defender. But there is a footballing point there as well, and something I'd kind of thought about.
Oh, man.
So we've had Airdrie beating us, Inverness, Queen's Park, Livingston, on about four games where, in terms of the kind of the players that we have on the pitch, the individual quality we have is probably a lot. You'd struggle to find somebody who would disagree that the individual quality of options that we have is somehow worse than what we've come up against. But for about the fourth or fifth week in a row, we've been beaten by a team that has been disciplined and streetwise and has done the basics well. You know, and just by being organised, disciplined, knowing how to take the sting out of a game, doing all these things, they've managed to get the upper hand over us. And you're watching us, and I'm kind of minded of Spain. So you look at the Spain men's national team, and you see the options, and you know, the guys like Morata, guys like Gavi, you know, Pedri, all these guys, you look at the quality that's there. But both Scotland and also the other team I shout for, Japan, figured out, you just let them pass it about, then you'll get a chance, you'll get a goal, and then you can nullify them. And teams have realised we are kind of like that. So I think that was my takeaway as well, was again, just realising how to kind of manage the game and take control of that again is something that we haven't figured out.
I was going to say, just really quickly on that, Les, I think you're 100% right. Doing the basics, it was something I was going to say and I'd completely forgotten. Charlie Telfer, we've somehow managed to make him look like he's like Messi or Maradona or something. He looks incredible against us, and I watched him, genuinely made a point of watching him, and all he does is he takes the ball at feet and he passes it on. He takes the ball into feet and he passes it on. He looks for the overlap, he looks for a winger, he looks for the ball to move. Whereas you look at the players we have, your Dylan Eastons and your Lewis Vaughns and stuff, who are taking the ball in, they're looking to kind of create something, but that involves invariably slowing everything down. It's about trying to beat a man or whatever, and I just felt like Friday night was a night where the sum of the parts was important. Like, Airdrie are better than the sum of their parts, and we are somehow worse than the sum of our parts, which was completely telling when you look at a player like Charlie Telfer, who, for all intents and purposes, when he was at Falkirk, looked like a shadow, and he's come to Airdrie and he looks great, and he gets the ball into feet and he moves on.
I think by far and away, Airdrie are in the division, the biggest disparity between sort of the value of the sum of their parts and what they actually are.
Yeah.
You know, the and I think, to be fair, it's credit to the manager. I think their manager's adding more value to their side than anybody else at the moment, certainly, or at least when he plays us. Just a final thought, or a final point on this one, I just want to very briefly mention the singing section from Friday night. Not what you would call ideal trial circumstances for that. I actually thought, given the circumstances, given the way the game developed, I thought it was fine. It was actually kind of better than I expected, almost. Started off relatively noisy with a goal 5 minutes in, obviously kills it, and then there is just nothing for the rest of that game. Like, and on a normal, or not a non-singing section game, that South Stand had been silent for that whole game. I can guarantee you that, especially in a Challenge Cup game. So I thought they did well given the circumstances, I think it's probably a case of having to almost hold off and trial it again, because there's not enough of a resounding success there to almost for the club to kind of there's a cost involved, essentially, not a monetary cost, but a cost involved in making turning that permanent, because you're moving season ticket holders and all this kind of stuff. So my season ticket seat is like two rows behind the two rows that they've closed off, and I think in all honesty, unless I was getting stuck in, I think I would probably have to move slightly further back, because there was folks standing kind of in the children, to be fair, but standing in that section, because obviously the singing section sold out, so there was more people around it. But I think what you would need would be for it to be sort of a resounding success first, and then you could point to it and go, look at all that noise. I'm sorry that people have had season tickets here, seats here for a while. We are going to ask you to move. I don't think you could really do that after Friday night. I don't think that's a solid enough body of evidence.
I have visions of this turning into the, you know, the opening 5 minutes of Up, with just like one old boy sat in the middle of it going, no, this is my seat and I will not move. This is where I have always sat. And I actually completely get it. There's been a lot of kind of folk on, the one thing I've not liked about the singing section thing has been some of the comments on social media and stuff about, oh, it's folk like you that are making sure that there's never going to be an atmosphere at Starks Park and stuff. Like, we need to get away from, personally, I think we need to get away from that. Wherever it happens to be, we can't, you can't lambast people for wanting to sit where they've always sat. Like, people have sentimental reasons to want to sit. I mean, I'll be the first to admit it, my season ticket seat was my dad's season ticket seat. And if I turn up to a game and there's somebody sat in that seat, I actually do take it quite, and I know I shouldn't because I'm an adult, but I do take it quite personally because I have an emotional attachment to a bit of plastic in the south stand, but I do. And there'll be a lot of people who are in a similar boat, and I think the club have done a really good job of managing that, and I think everybody needs to kind of play their part in understanding that and making sure that it works going forward. Because I think it's easy for me to sit at the back and go, ah, it's only a seat, because it's no my seat. But yeah, it was a shame because there was a lot of kind of effort put into making that work, and then 6 minutes in, you couldn't have written it.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, Graham said it on whatever the night it was we recorded last, when I talked about hospitality. It was like, don't let the football get in the way of enjoying a day at the football. Unfortunately, the football got in the way of trialing a fan experience at the football on on Friday night. So,
football got in the way of football on Friday night, let's be honest.
Yeah. And that's something that's always going to be a risk of that. So I think probably a case of trial that again and see what you can get from it. So, yeah, I think there was enough evidence there that it probably would be a success if things came around well. But again, I think it's worthwhile trying it. Credit to the club for trying things. I'm sure it won't be the last. There'll be other things that are tested along the way, and ultimately we'll end up in a better place for it. Right, so let's kind of close out today with our big question. So in his post-match interview, so Ian Murray, which I saw a couple of people saying, I think actually not Rovers fan, people saying, like, do you really want a 12-minute interview with your manager after you've been beaten? And I mean, well, I didn't watch it until this morning, so maybe, but actually, no, I appreciate that kind of level of communication. Again, we've talked about it a lot. I find Ian Murray very level-headed and kind of interesting to listen to, even we have lost sort of five games in a row. I just think he's very, comes across very, very sort of genuine, and as if he is just, you know, like if you, for whatever reason, if you stopped him in the street and asked him about it, he'd give you the same answer. He's not doing sort of performative interview answers. And I think you actually get that in the way that the questions that David Hancock's asking him as well, because they're not like antagonistic by any means at all. But see, if there wasn't a good relationship there, I think you'd get managers who would be like, don't ask me that again. Like, because he's specifically saying to me, like he said to him last week, he's like, how did that back three work? And he was like, well, it didn't. And you know it didn't. Like, I think a lot of managers, I think a lot of interviewers wouldn't ask that of their own manager. Like, you made a tactical change and it didn't work. How come?
I think that's a lot to do with Murray, though. I think the relationship, because I think Davey Hancock had a really good relationship with Murray. With McGlynn. I don't think he would have asked those questions of McGlynn, because I think McGlynn wouldn't have. I think you're right, McGlynn wouldn't have answered them. And if you get a chance, there's the Pars have put up, sorry, I needed to mention it, they got scudded 5-0 and they need their faces rubbed in a wee bit. But McPake, they put up an audio interview, a minute and 14 seconds in, long. And one of the questions was about, you know, are you looking over your shoulder at the relegation thing? And McPake's like, I don't even understand why you would ask that question. Of course I'm looking over my shoulder. I'm like, well, he's asking the question because it's a relevant question. And I think you're right, Murray answers those questions head on.
And that's I enjoy listening to him, even if it is, you know, like a defeat or whatever. Categorically, there are managers we've had in the past that after five games in the bounce, well, first of all, I wouldn't be listening to their interviews because there wouldn't be any point. But if I did, you'd know it would be painful and it would be, you'd be hearing either directly or indirectly, like excuses. And all that, but as I say, Ian Murray just comes across very genuine. He's like, look, this is particularly the back three last week. And he's just like, it didn't work. Yeah, a lot of managers wouldn't have said that. Just wouldn't have said, actually, no, that didn't work. But what he did say is, he's like, look, in terms of all these results that we've had, both in the first half of the season and now, it's like, luck's got nothing to do with it. Like, I didn't come out after all those narrow victories and say, well, we're bloody lucky there. So he's like, I'm not going to sit here now and say, well, we've been unlucky to lose these games. Luck's going to have to do with that. But what he did make quite a point of doing was talking about kind of trust and belief, like belief in themselves. And you know, we've mentioned it here as well. Which I think is interesting, because a lot of the time, to me, Ian Murray, he tends to talk about quite directly sort of football-related stuff. He talks about different players coming in, but he doesn't often talk about that kind of stuff. So obviously, though, they go into a two-week break. We don't have a game next weekend. So there'll be a fair bit of rebuilding to be done there. Not just tactically and on the pitch, but there'll be an element of team building and restoring belief and self-assurance and all that kind of stuff. So as I say, this is a very, very long question. But my big question for today is, if I was to give you one of those days in the next couple of weeks, send an oversight to you, which I think they'd probably enjoy in your case, Carol. We trip to Barcelona.
I was going to say, I think that you would, it didn't matter what they do. If you just say you're going to Barcelona, they'd be like, yep, I'm in.
Yeah, exactly. That'll work. But so if I handed their oversight over to you for 24 hours, how would you go about sort of rebuilding their self-belief and their trust in one another? And Carol, we'll stick with you, please. What's your plan?
Team building has become very fashionable in Barcelona, and there's lots of different things from throwing axes to climbing buildings. But the one that popped out at me, and it's going along the sort of, I am here for the competitive cartooning that has come out on the back of Rovers social media. I am all for this. So I'm going to go down the artistic route, and there's a thing called Wingo. So you're doing Vincent van Gogh paintings, fueled by wine, in the dark with UV paint. If you're not team building and having fun after that, nothing will. And you're in Barcelona. So after that, you can toddle out of your slightly inebriated dark box and go and have some fun. So yeah, I'm not going to do any of this nonsense that you're going to like build together as a team. No, we're going to have fun. That's what I'm going for. And competitive cartooning, I am here for it.
Who in the Rover squad strikes you as a budding Van Gogh, Carol?
I think Kev would get to do it. I don't know why. I think he would fully be in for it. I don't know why it comes across. I think he'd be full on for anything involved. I think Kev would be fully there. But yeah.
I agree.
That's my suggestion.
Worth saying, speaking of Eastern European goalies, do not ask me how I know this. Pavel Pinksa has basically become a conceptual artist since retiring. So I can fully believe that Big Kev would be behind that.
I don't even know why that doesn't A, it doesn't surprise me that it's true, and B, I don't know why it doesn't surprise me that you know that.
It doesn't surprise me that you know that in the slightest. That is one thing I'm very willing to accept. But if you had said to me, a Rovers goalkeeper from the last 30 years has become a conceptual artist, the one that I wouldn't have picked would be, was he Slovakian? Slovenian, possibly?
He was Slovakian.
He's Slovakian. He turned up for his signing photo in a purple bomber jacket and camouflage trousers and was photographed just giving it the big come ahead in the goal mouth at Starks Park. I dread to think what concept his art centres around.
You know, we're all Googling it right now to see exactly what he's producing.
Deary me. Well, listen, I hope he's a better artist than he is a goalkeeper. Say that much. Something of a panic merchant. Leslie, give me your squad building or your team building exercise idea, please.
Right. We need, I think, to be a bit more streetwise. We need a bit more strength because we're getting battered about the place in the middle of the park. So I think that we need a day of gladiators in the San Starco. Install some travelators in the south stand. Get the pugil sticks set up in the centre circle. Let's get the rings and do hang tough on the roof of the main stand. And get the guys working in teams to learn how to take knocks and also how to take the sting out of things. I think just having that kind of that bit of physicality, that bit of training, and hopefully something that's not going to result in moon boots is going to really get us. we'll get a message in the WhatsApp from one of the more in the know members. Don't let this be known, but I saw somebody in a moon boot. We believe they were doing the gauntlet in the centre circle and it went wrong. But and I think that was
going to say Lewis.
Aye, there you go.
Lewis Vaughan can set that one out, surely.
Yeah, absolutely. He's exempt from it. And I think Gladiators is also points-based. You know, you've got a number of things going on and you've got a number of activities that are going to give you points. So you've got to be able to get in a lead. You've got to be able to stay in a lead. Holding on to leads is something we've struggled with. Gladiators is going to help. And speaking of leads, I also just want to say something about sticking with Ian Murray. Because yesterday, Martin thumped Dunfermline 5-0. Now, you go back 2 months... Probably all of us thought Dougie Emery was toast. You know, they've stuck with him. Things have changed. Sometimes it just takes a break. And now, you know, they're touting him on the radio for Premier League manager. So, you know, just as well, look at that. Morton did brilliantly against Dunfermline. Brilliant result. That shows what sticking with a manager can do. So anybody who thinks that we need to get rid of the manager after a Challenge Cup defeat needs to give their head a wobble.
And the same goes for Dunfermline fans. Keep McPake, please.
Yeah, Blair, give me your team building, please.
I'm going to go slightly old school on this one because I don't know if a lot of Rovers fans will know it, but we were talking about it beforehand. The Rovers players didn't have a Christmas night out this year through fixture congestion and everything else that went on. So having had an amazing start to the season, they never got to go out and kind of celebrate. So genuinely, I would take my 24 hours and I would double it. I'd give them a couple of days. But I honestly think they need to go, and I actually genuinely think that this is something that should happen, actually, in this fortnight, is let them go to Dublin, or wherever they're going to go, a day at the races, or whatever it is. They actually, I think they just need like that time to kind of gel, and not even gel, that's not the right thing, because they're obviously really together, but I think they just need to blow off a bit of steam and start again.
Decompress. Yeah, proper, I think there's just a lot of
fancy dress.
Pressure and tension. Let that off. Just let it all go.
Away and enjoy yourself, boys. You've earned it. And I know there'll be a lot of Rovers fans will be thinking, what, 5 games on the bounce? And we're going to let them celebrate. And it's the usual thing, you know. I saw them on a Friday night having a beer and they've lost 5. Like, so what? They're human beings. We all deserve a bit of steam blowing off at times. So, yeah. Dublin, races, beer. Live music, all of it. I'm in.
I think all very good ideas. I don't know if you could maybe just string them together. Maybe get the Gladiators going fully hungover. Coming off the back of 2 nights in Dublin and you're straight on those big earbud things and you're just getting done again and again. And then a wee trip to a dark box and some painting afterwards to really set the recovery in. That's what champions are made of. Yeah, resounding good ideas, I think. And I would like to hear anybody else's suggestions for that too. So you can always ping them on the Twitter and the Instagram and the YouTube comments as well. And we'll see what we can come up with to get this train back on the tracks for the second part of the season. But I think that will bring us to a close for today. So once again, thank you everybody for listening. I think much like the team, I think we are also going to take a break for next week, quite frankly, because our preview and post-match review structure really collapses when there isn't a game. So, I mean, who knows? You never know what happens to the Rovers. Something might appear in an emergency podcast, might be called for. But I think failing that, the next time you hear from us will be a week on Thursday, as we look forward to a very, very big game against Dundee United. But Izzy, thank you once again for listening. Thank you for watching. You will be able to keep up with any of the normal shenanigans, Izzy, on the Twitter and on the Instagram as well, which Carol's still looking after. There is still the merch shop if you want to buy T-shirts and mugs and all that kind of stuff as well. And thank you, of course, to everybody who has done so. And yeah, enjoy your break. I think we're all needing a wee break from the football just for the time being. And we'll see you when we're back.